Welcome to this week's podcast at Bergen Park Church from Evergreen, Colorado. We hope you enjoy this message, and if you'd like to hear any more or learn more about the church, please visit bergenparkchurch.org.
Welcome to Bergen Park Church. It's so good to see your faces, to be with you. It's always a privilege. You know, when we pray on Sunday morning, we recognize that, I even prayed this morning, God, thank you that we get to play. We get to use our gifts today with friends and family that gather together in this community to follow Jesus together. And so it's always a privilege when we get to meet new faces, we get to see old faces and share life together. That's what we're about as a church, is the community. I mean, I think we've got some fantastic worship and the preaching's okay, you know, it's fair. Yeah, it gets by. But it's the community. It's the relationships and doing life together that matters to us. And I don't know if you know this, like Tuesday. I think it was Tuesday. Did something happen Tuesday? It's like an election. I don't know, small. Actually, you know what? I'm so grateful for the snow. It just kind of cleansed everything. Did you feel that way? It like locked us in the house, except the second wave didn't really hit. But anyways. And so there's a book that I use quite often. It's called For Every Moment. And I think there's like six of these. And you may want to look this up if anyone invites you to their house to pray over their new child, if you're praying over a home, or if you want to pray for an election and the results of an election. There are these prayers that somebody's artfully written together that kind of captures maybe what's most important. Because during an election season, I think there's a lot of things that get raised up as most important. But after that election season, what's most important? So I want to read this to you, if you guys can pull up that image. It's a liturgy for Election Day. Now, it's not Election Day, but it's after Election Day. I just want to read this to you, if you follow along with me. So, if you're one of those that's pleased with the results of today's election, let us yet in humility remember that every earthly authority must one day give way to your eternal rule. So let us in grace love all our neighbors well. And if we are disappointed, let us all resist fear, anger, accusation, bitterness, but instead renew our trust in you. And let us, in grace, love all our neighbors well. And whatever the outcome of this election, let our citizenship and our hope be rooted first in your heavenly kingdom, that we might live in exile here as winsome ambassadors of your soon returning king. And always in grace, loving all our neighbors well. Yeah, I think we need that. We need that. I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you. You guys probably know it, not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Do you know that promise? Yeah, it's one of the most well-known promises from the Old Testament. It's Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 11. I know the plans I have for you. Sounds great, right? Plans to prosper you. I don't want to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future. But do you know when that promise was given? Because we often take it, because it sounds great. Yeah, I'm into that. I'm into prospering and a future. And that sounds beautiful. Like, give me some of that. What we miss out on is the context. And in verses 10 and verses 7, I want to read kind of the context around that passage. And here's verse 10. For thus says the Lord, when 70 years are completed for Babylon. So Jeremiah is writing to Daniel. Daniel's in exile. We're in the book of Daniel. We're finishing up today, but Daniel's in slavery. He's in exile. And Jeremiah's writing, and he's saying, listen, when those 70 years of hardship and suffering, when they're over, I will visit you. And I will fulfill to you my promise and bring you back to this place. And that's when he says, I know the plans I have for you. But while you're in exile, while you're in slavery, while you're living in this foreign nation that's oppressing you, here's what I want you to do, Daniel. Here's how I want you to live. Verse 7, seek the welfare of the city where I've sent you into exile. All this bad stuff, all that's going on, I've sent you into exile. And here's what I want you to do. Seek their welfare and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare, you will find your welfare. I know the plans I have for you. not to harm you, but to prosper you, give you hope and a future, if we remain faithful in exile, if we endure, if we love our enemies, if we pray for those who persecute us. See, what we do when we take a verse out of context is we take all the meat away. And it just sounds like this real pretty thing that you can embroider on a t-shirt or on a pillow or get a magnet or a coffee mug, and it looks nice and we feel great when we look at it. But then we see the context, and God is saying to Daniel, Daniel, I'm going to bless you. But that blessing, it's going to come through refinement. I'm going to have to get you in a place where you're going to have to trust me and you're going to have to rely on me. And you're going to be in the land where the values of that country and that land and that nation are not aligning with your values. And you're going to be in a community that's trying to push you away from God or reject you or reject the God that you worship. And it's in that space of faithfulness for 70 years. After that period of 70 years, I'm going to bless you and I'm going to give you a hope and a future. Do you want that promise still? How many of you are throwing away the coffee mug when you get home? Right? It's hard. It's hard. See, what impresses me so much is we spent nine weeks. We didn't get through all the chapters. I'm sorry, some A-types, I know. You're like, listen, you didn't get through all the verses. It's okay. What impresses me so much about this book, it's not the miracles. Those are the stories that we tell in VBS, right? Daniel in the lion's den. It's pretty cool. Or surviving the furnace. It's not the interpretation of dreams. It's the integrity of Daniel. That's the miracle I see in this story, is the depth of this man's character and what he was facing, what he was up against, and how everybody else, I don't know if you know this, so like we're going to talk a little bit today about why did Babylon come? Why did Israel get taken off into captivity? And everybody around Daniel was unfaithful. You know, his parents, his grandparents, his great-grandparents go 400 years of generations, right? They were unfaithful to God. And God kept warning them, listen, I'm going to send calamity. Trouble's going to come. But turn, just turn. Trust me, prophet after prophet. And then when Daniel gets to exile in Babylon, he's not alone. I mean, there's four other guys with him or three other guys. I can't remember. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Yeah, so four total. And there's a whole bunch of other men and women that were in captivity, but you don't hear about them. And I assume that's because maybe they compromised. And so Daniel's remaining faithful. His generations past have been unfaithful. The people around him are unfaithful, right? And that's just all adding suffering and hardship, and it's making everything in following God more difficult when everyone else around you is moving in a different direction and you're pushing against the current of culture. That's hard. And Daniel didn't become bitter. I think I'd become bitter. Right? Or have a victim mentality. How dare these people be so unrighteous? What a country I live in. Nebuchadnezzar, you nasty, I don't know, whatever he'd say. I'm faithful to God. And my generation's messing it up, and my parents' generation messed it up, and the land I live in, and you just get nasty, don't you, when you sit in that place, and I'm righteous, and I'm comparing myself to everyone else, and even the most faithful person can find themselves starting to get distorted a little bit. Daniel doesn't go there. And as I reflect on his life, I kind of see how I think I could go there. I think I could get bitter or become a victim or take on a pity mentality. And so what's going to keep us staying faithful to God and not allowing the distractions or the unfaithfulness of people around us to take us down the wrong path? And that's what Daniel chapter 9, that's where we're going to end today in Daniel 9, that's where it takes us. That Daniel has something that's captivating in his life. And I'm going to introduce you to a theological word. We're going to spend a lot of time talking a little theology. Hope you're okay with that, but I think it'll apply to life. That Daniel sees something in the character of God that overwhelms him, it reshapes him, it molds him, it breaks him, it gives him courage. And it's this word, righteousness. Daniel sees the righteousness of God, and it gives him this courage and humility to face the challenges and the season in which he's living. And so that's what we're going to look at. You guys ready for this? We're going to look at one of the most beautiful confessions in all the Bible. Old Testament, New Testament, Daniel's just simply confessing to God where he is, what's going on, and what he needs. And what he's going to see out of the character of God is this beautiful picture This amazing image of God's righteousness. You guys ready for that? Can you handle it? Okay, I think so. And I got to be honest with you, I'm just thinking right now, there's a verse, there's a word in verse 1 I can't pronounce, so I'm going to skip it. I'm just going to skip it, okay? You're going to be like, why didn't he pronounce it? Because I can't pronounce it. I tried. I tried all week to memorize this word. And I can't do it. It's okay. Jesus loves me. So, Daniel chapter 9, verse 1. Let's jump into it. In the first year of Darius, here's the word, the son of, how would you pronounce it? Okay. That's what I heard. Yeah. Thankfully, it only shows up once. Yeah. A descendant of Mede who was made king over the realm of the Chaldeans. In the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, perceived in the books the number of years that according to the word of the Lord to Jeremiah the prophet must pass before the end of the desolations of Jerusalem, namely 70 years. So I'm going to pause real quick right there. Daniel's saying, I was reading Jeremiah, which is kind of cool, and he calls it the word of the Lord. That's fascinating. And he says, Jeremiah, when I was in my devotional, said after 70 years has passed, he's going to relent. And so what he's saying is Nebuchadnezzar, if you remember chapter 1, he's gone. Babylon's gone. A new king and a new kingdom has come. And the Medo-Persian Empire, which is Medes and Persians, come together. They've wiped out the Babylonians. And now this new king is in place. And his name's Darius or Darius, however you want to pronounce it. And realize, Daniel has served under 4 kings, none of which he chose. 2 kingdoms, none of which he agreed with. And yet he was an ally to those kings and those kingdoms. I think that's remarkable, because we can't do that today with our 2-party system. Daniel served under 4 kings he deeply disagreed with. 2 kingdoms he wanted nothing to do with. And yet, because of his character, because of his compassion, because of his integrity, he was seen as an ally to these people who did not value what Daniel valued and did not worship what Daniel worshiped. That should be the church. That should be the church. That's Daniel's story. And I find that just absolutely, absolutely remarkable. And watch what happens. After 70 years, he's reading the story of Jeremiah, reading this promise, verse 3, and then I turn my face to the Lord, seeking him by prayer and pleas for mercy. And notice he's fasting, he's in sackcloth and ashes, and I prayed to the Lord my God, and I made confession. So that's this prayer. Circle that word, confession. It's the most beautiful prayer of confession, I think, really in much of the Bible, and it reveals this humility and courage and compassion that Daniel has. So let's back up and answer a question we didn't answer in the beginning, is how did all of this happen? Like, why is Israel taken off into captivity? And we have to rewind. Can we rewind like 800 years? Can you do that in your mind? From the time of Babylon, which is like 600 BC, I guess, something like that. And we rewind all the way back, and Israel is in Egypt. You know that story? The beginning of the Exodus story, end of Genesis, and Israel's in captivity in Egypt. They're enslaved. There's nothing they can do. Pharaoh rules over them like an iron fist. And they cry out to God. And God sends a mediator, Moses. And Moses goes before Pharaoh and says, let my people go. And eventually God rescues Israel out of Egypt, and he brings them into this desert. Doesn't seem like a great space, but they're trusting, they're relying on God. And at Mount Sinai, that's where God enters into an agreement, a covenant, or you could say like a relationship with Israel. And you guys know the first 10 stipulations of that covenant. Do you know them, the first 10, the big 10? Yeah, they're called the 10 Commandments. And God says, in this relationship with me, I'm going to be faithful to you. I'm going to bless you. Like through Abraham, you're going to be a blessing to all the nations. But here's what it looks like to be faithful to me. Here's what it looks like to be my rescued people. Would you guys follow these 10 commandments? And then after that, some other laws came. And all of these laws were stipulations about what this relationship looks like. Just when you get married, right? You're trying to figure out, what is this? How does this relationship work? And you didn't know about that law. That was a pretty important law. And you blew that. But you discovered it, right? And that's every relationship works on law. Do you know that love works on law? Because there's things she loves and things he loves. Well, likewise with God. God's just saying, this is what I love. And one of the things I love is I love people. I love right relationships. I love righteousness. And what happened is after they wandered in the desert 400 years, so we're fast-forwarding 400 years, they're now in the Promised Land. And how well do they do in the Promised Land? You know the story of the Old Testament? Like, how well does Israel do? Like, a score of 1 to 10. It's kind of a 1, or maybe a 0.5. They don't do very well. And why is that? Because God's not enough for them. Do you know that? And they tell God. I mean, you're not enough. God, listen, listen, listen. Have you seen the other nations of the world? They got kings. You're not enough. I want a king. Wouldn't that be great, guys, if we had a king that ruled this place? Wouldn't that be sweet? Yeah, we don't want you. We want a king. We want political power, right? And God, listen, listen, listen. All the nations around us, they got all these beautiful temples on top of the hills and Asherah poles and stuff. We just have this one temple. Can we get some more stuff in this place? You're not enough. And so what do? They start worshiping the gods of the nations, right? Hey, God, our military power is not big enough. We can't go in there with this weak, little, tiny military power. You're not good enough. We're not going to trust you. And that's what's happening all through the story is God's not enough. And what's God doing? He's taking away all their security blankets. Listen, I don't want you to go into this battle with 3,000. Why don't we take 300 of the weakest men in this room, right? It's like, no, we don't want to do that. And God's constantly taking away all of these things, right? We're picking up all this stuff that's going to make us strong. And God's saying, I'm enough. I'm enough. And what happens? 400 years, right, of rebellion. God says, I've had enough. 400 years of patience. And that's when Babylon comes. Babylon is both the consequence of their behavior, but it's also the reality of God's justice. You'll see this in the Bible. Sin is a consequence. Like when we sin against God, there's a consequence, isn't there? But there's also God's justice in the consequence of our own disobedience. And that's what happens with Babylon. Babylon comes in and they're God's justice, but they're also a consequence and they're taken off into captivity. And that's why Israel's in Babylon right now, because they were unfaithful. Now, here's the question. Was Daniel faithful? Have you read the book yet? I mean, it's amazing. Like, this is one of the very, very few books in the Bible where God says, yeah, he did a good job. Most of the biblical characters are not good dudes. Do you notice that? Most of them fail. Most of them are like us, right? I mean, we're good at moments and then we just blow it. Daniel's a really good dude. And so that's how Daniel got there, the failure of his family, his parents, grandparents, 400 generations, 400 years. And then he gets to Babylon, and how faithful are the people around him? All the captives, right? All we got is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We got four guys that are really walking with God. The rest of them have rebelled. And Daniel remains faithful. In all of that pressure, he hasn't done anything wrong, but what's he's dealing with the consequences of everybody else's sin. Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever felt that way? And did it lead you to be humble? Did it lead you to courage? When everybody else is messing up, I've got it together. What kept Daniel in this place of courage and conviction and character? Well, that's where we're going right now. I want to just read this prayer for you. We're going to jump into this prayer of confession. We're going to pick it up in verse 4. I'm going to read all the way down to verse 19. It's quite long. But I want you to listen to Daniel and think about the history he's been through. Think about who he is and his faithfulness and listen to the way he's thinking about what's going on in his nation, in the world, and what he's thinking about God. And then after we read this, we're going to talk a little bit about how the righteousness of God gave Daniel so much humility and compassion. Let's jump in. So here comes this prayer, verse 4. And I prayed to the Lord my God and made confession, saying, O Lord, the great and awesome God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments, we have sinned and done wrong and act wickedly and rebelled, turning aside your commandments and rules. We've not listened to your servants, the prophets, who spoke in your name to our kings, our princes, our fathers, and to all the people of our land. To you, O Lord, belongs righteousness, but to us, open shame. As at this day, to the men of Judah, to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, to all of Israel, those who are near to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Those who are near and those who are far away. In all the lands to which you have driven them, because of the treachery that they have committed against you, to us, O Lord, belongs open shame. To our kings, our princes, our fathers, because we have sinned against you. But to the Lord, to our God, belongs mercy And to our God belongs forgiveness, for we rebelled against him and have not obeyed the voice of the Lord our God by walking in his laws, which he set before us by his servants, the prophets. And all Israel transgressed your law and turned aside, refusing to obey your voice. And the curse, the oaths that are written in the law of Moses, the servant of God, have been poured out upon us because we've sinned against him. And he has confirmed his word, which he spoke against us and against our rulers who ruled us, by bringing upon us a great calamity. For under the whole heaven there has not been done anything like what has been done against Jerusalem. As it is written in the law of Moses, all this calamity has come upon us, and yet we have not entreated the favor of the Lord our God, turning from our iniquities and gaining insight by your truth. Therefore, the Lord has kept ready the calamity and has brought it upon us, meaning Babylon. For the Lord our God is righteous in all his works that he has done, and we have not obeyed his voice. And now, O Lord our God, who brought your people out of the land of Egypt with a mighty hand and have made a name for yourself, as at this day we have sinned and we have done wickedly. O Lord, according to your righteous acts, let your anger and wrath turn away from your city, Jerusalem, your holy hill, because of our sins, for the iniquity of our fathers, Jerusalem and your people have become a byword among all those who are around us. Now, therefore, O God, listen to the prayer of your servant and to his plea for mercy. And for your sake, O Lord, make your face to shine upon your sanctuary, which is desolate. O my God, incline your ear and hear. Open your eyes and see our desolation in the city that is called by your name. For we do not present our plea before you because of our righteousness, but because of your great mercy. O Lord, hear. O Lord, forgive. O Lord, pay attention and act. Delay not for your own sake, O my God, because your city and your people are called by your name. This is the word of the Lord. Oh, thanks be to God. How are we doing? There's a word that you'll see repeated four times. It's this word, righteousness. See, we talked in the first message that we jumped into in the book of Daniel. Daniel had two things that I think all of us need to be faithful. One, he had a vision of God's character. He also had a vision of God's story. That God's character, his truth, is never disconnected from what he's doing in the world. And Daniel had a vision of the character and the goodness of God. But he also had the presence of the Holy Spirit. That he didn't apply truth blindly. He knew that God was at work, even when things seemed horrible, right? He knew God was at work in his life, and it was God, through the power of the Spirit, that was directing, guiding, giving him wisdom to apply truth in the current moment. And Daniel has this vision of God's righteousness. And he mentions it four times, and I want to show you this. We're going to focus mainly on these verses, if you guys can pull up that one slide. And you're going to see this word four times. In verse 7, in verse 14, and in verse 16, and in verse 18. And I want to look at just briefly. Daniel begins this prayer, and he says, to you, O Lord, belongs righteousness. So God, you're righteous. And notice which category Daniel's putting himself into. Right? He has that language. He doesn't pray, you sinned, right? You guys messed up. It's like, we did. So God, you're righteous, but we're unrighteous. To us belongs open shame. Verse 14. And therefore, because of our shame, because of our unrighteousness, the Lord has kept ready, and I love this language, the calamity. It just sounds horrible, right? That means Babylon. That there was this reality. God kept saying, listen, if you don't turn, calamity is going to come. Not because I want it to come, but that's the consequence of our disobedience. It's God's justice, but it's also the consequence of sin. And this calamity, it comes. And why does this calamity come? Do you notice what he says? Why did the calamity come? Do you notice the word? Because God is righteous. So Babylon came and destroyed Jerusalem, destroyed the temple, destroyed their families. Why? Because God is righteous. We need to unpack that. That seems a little messed up, doesn't it? It seems strange. But then notice this. Watch how this word righteousness changes. It changes in verse 16. So, O Lord, according to your righteous acts, let your anger and wrath turn away. So in verse 14, because you're righteous, you let some bad stuff happen. But verse 16, because you're righteous, let all that bad stuff go away. And not because of our righteousness, but because of your great mercy, O Lord, heal and forgive. You see how this word's being used? I find it fascinating. As a Bible nerd or dork, I don't know which I am, I find this word fascinating because on the one hand, he's saying, God, why did Babylon come? Because you're righteous. And why are you going to forgive us? Because you're righteous. Why did calamity come? Because you're righteous. Why are you going to forgive us? Because you're righteous. Does that seem strange? That God's righteousness leads to this consequence and this suffering, and yet God's righteousness leads to forgiveness. Because you're righteous, forgive us. So what is the righteousness of God? Does that confuse you a little bit? It does me. If you're a little confused, I hope you are. I'm trying to make you confused. So what is this word righteousness? I want to define this term, if you can go to that other slide. I want to define this word righteousness. In the Hebrew, it's this word tzedak, and it's tzedakeh or tzedak. And it has a very unique definition. Now, today, we don't really use the word righteous, do you? I mean, how many of you this week, do you think, outside of a religious context, went, oh, man, wasn't that concert righteous? I mean, I don't, so old, right? Right, Guinness? I'm old. Yeah. Yeah. We don't use are the righteous brothers. I mean, that's really old. You've lost that look. Anyway. Yeah. It's an old word, isn't it? It's a religious word. Maybe today someone might say there's a righteous cause or a righteous person. So righteousness, I think, in the English language is more about moral purity or maybe even niceness or decency. Well, that's kind of what it means in the Bible, but really not. The word righteousness in the Bible is just not about just moral decency or kindness or goodness, but rather a righteous person is someone who does right by God. It's a relationship term. A righteous person, it's a standard of right relationship. It's doing right by someone. You can't be righteous by yourself. You can only be righteous in relationship to another person. Does that make sense? It's kind of why Jesus summarized. Remember how Jesus summarized the law? What's the righteousness of the law? Two things. Do right by God. And how do you know you're doing right by God? You start doing right by others. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, strength. Love your neighbors. Righteousness is always a relationship term. You can't be righteous apart from right relationship. And what's fascinating also in the Sermon on the Mount, do you know how Jesus said, you're not very good at knowing who's righteous and who's unrighteous? Do you realize Jesus talked a lot about that? I would think I'm pretty good at that. If there's one thing I'm good at, it's knowing the difference between someone who's righteous and unrighteous. And he's constantly saying, yeah, but you don't know the motivations of their heart. You don't know why they're doing what they're doing. You don't know what's driving. You don't know what's moving them. And righteousness is this right to be in right standing, which means both right action, but right motive and right heart. That's righteousness. That's righteousness. It's a standard of being in right relationship. And all of us have a lot of different relationships, right? I mean, fathers and mothers in the room, anybody? Aunts, uncles, grandparents, children? What does it mean to be a righteous husband? Well, I only know what it means in relationship if Melissa's here. To be a righteous husband, I really have to know how my behavior and my actions and my way of life impacts my wife, right? Because it's not about applying just a naked standard over my wife and our relationship, but instead, probably to be righteous in my marriage, it means I think I need to listen. These are the things I struggle with, right? I need to not give advice. That's something my counselor tells me. Jason, what would it look like this month not to give her advice? Like, I don't know. That doesn't sound like a good idea. Why don't you try that for a moment and just listen to her? And why don't you start giving feedback about, hey, it sounds like you're feeling anxious here. Is that correct? And it would look like being present, right? It would look like commitment and faithfulness, and it would look like investment and self-sacrificial time. I want to watch the football game or whatever it is, and she wants me to be with her. That's what righteousness would look like in my relationship with my wife. Now, that's not the only relationship we have. Some of you are employers or entrepreneurs or business owners. What does it look like to have righteousness as a characteristic or quality in your work relationships? I mean, I guess if you're providing income, that would be providing an income that's fair, equitable. I don't know what words to use. Creating an environment in which people are able to use their gifts and talents and abilities, good feedback, good job description. That's what righteousness looks like, right? You can't just put a standard over that. But what does it look like for you to have a right relationship with the people around you at work? And then your neighborhood this week. How many of you shoveled somebody's driveway? You can show your righteousness. No, no one wants to. Either you're too humble or nobody cares, right, about your neighbors. To be a good neighbor, right, is to do right by our neighbors. And this week, maybe shoveling somebody's driveway or going over and knowing that person's probably been inside the last 3 days and they can't get out. It could be bringing food. Because righteousness is not just a standard that we're trying to follow. It's about how do I do right by the people in my life? And right, do you notice how every relationship, it looks different, doesn't it? You need wisdom. You need wisdom. You need guidance to know what that's going to look like depending on the relationship. And that's what we see in Daniel. As you go through this story, from chapter 1 to Nebuchadnezzar to all these different kings and rulers and leaders, Daniel has a way of righteousness, a way of living that's unique to the person he's dealing with, isn't it? And it's amazing the way that Daniel at times chooses to respond. Sometimes he's interpreting a dream for the king, and the dream's really, really bad. Do you remember this? And Daniel's nervous and anxious, like, I don't want to tell you, O king, about this dream because you're not going to be happy. And he says, actually, to the king, I wish it was for your enemies, but it's for you. That's compassion. That's righteousness. He's got to speak truth, but he's also a man of compassion. He doesn't want the king to suffer, but he knows the king's done wrong. That's righteousness, it's being right relationship. Not just speaking truth, but living the story of God in reality. That God cares more about this guy's behavior and just getting him right. God cares about this man's heart. And part of Daniel's reality is to live righteously before him. That's what captivates his heart. And so I want to jump back in verses 7 and 14 and 16 and 18 and see how that shows up in God's life, in God's behaviors towards us. And then I want to unpack that and just apply it to us today. So let's jump back. Because what's changing Daniel in this story is this vision of righteousness. He's overwhelmed by the beauty of the way that God is interacting with him and with his nation. So watch this again, verse 7. Again, he says, to you, O Lord, belongs right relationships. You treat us according to what we deserve. You treat us rightly. Have you experienced that with God? Like God is in right relationship with us. And how did he see that? Well, God rescued Israel out of Egypt. That was right. God did that for them. And then he brought them into this land overflowing with milk and honey, and he provided for them. He cared for them. He kept his promises. He blessed them. 400 years, God continued to do that. But notice, did we relate rightly to God? No. To us was shame. We took your promises and your faithfulness and we rejected it. We rejected it. And we were unrighteous. We violated your covenant. And then watch how this shifts in verse 14. Therefore, the Lord has kept ready the calamity, which means Babylon, and he's brought it upon us. For the Lord our God is righteous. So God brought Babylon into our lives. He brought calamity. He brought suffering. He brought judgment. Why? Because he's righteous. Now, this is a different kind of relating. This is not a father relating to a son. This is a judge relating to the people. For 400 years, God was patient. And he warned them. Here's the consequence. Prophet after prophet after, and Daniel mentions that. Prophet's warning, hey, if you don't turn, if you don't repent, calamity's going to come. And eventually, calamity comes. God is just. God is righteous to his people in addressing the consequence of their behavior. Now, we understand that this is good and right. So, for example, if today, it wouldn't happen here because we have a fantastic safety team. I'm not supposed to point them out, but we have a fantastic safety team. But imagine today somebody broke into your car. And again, it wouldn't happen because they're watching. But somebody broke into your car and you left your wallet in the car. Shouldn't have done that. And they stole your wallet. And they went out to King Supers, I guess, or Home Depot, and there's the video, and they're, right, they're charging, getting some good stuff. They're guilty. and they're arrested. Let's say they get arrested, and the video's there, and you're there, and the judge is there, and you're watching it, like, yeah, the guy stole my credit card, and he's guilty. But the judge looks at the man, and how would you feel if the judge said, well, I'm sure you just had a bad day, right? You had a bad day, didn't he? Come on, he had a bad day. He needed a little help. Your credit card was there. You left it in the car. Shouldn't have done that. Would that judge be acting right towards you? Would that be righteous? Would that be a righteous judge? Would he be acting right towards the law? Would he be acting right towards the person by allowing that person just to ignore the consequences? No, he's not righteous. And that's what's happening in verse 14. God is a righteous judge. And for God to be righteous, he has to address the consequence. We know this in parenting, right? If you're a parent and you don't address the behaviors of your kids, are you a good, righteous parent? No. Because that kid's going to grow up thinking punching my brother in the face is fine, right? And I'm just going to keep doing that and getting away with it. No, it's not righteous. And so in verse 14, God, you're righteous by bringing the consequences of my behavior upon my life. And Daniel's sitting in that because he knows he's a part of the mess that brought Babylon into the world, even though he was faithful. And he was not unfaithful in the way his parents were, or grandparents, or even the people around him. He still knows he was unfaithful compared to God's faithfulness. Do you see that? And then watch what happens. And if you guys can go again to that, where they're side by side so you can kind of see them. In verse 16, this is a different form of righteousness. It says, O Lord, according to your righteous acts, let your anger and your wrath turn away. So because you're righteous, don't send calamity, turn it away. That's different than verse 14. And notice, not because we're righteous, right? But because of your great mercy, O Lord, hear and forgive. God, because you're righteous, you're going to send calamity, but because you're righteous, you're going to forgive us. You see those two aspects. And both are true at the same time. You're a righteous judge, and you're going to bring the consequences of our sin, but you're also, in what way is God righteous that he must forgive? Because that's what Daniel's saying. And what he's pulling upon is God's righteous commitment to his own promises, to his covenant, to his agreement. That through Abraham, God said through Abraham, I'm going to bless the nations of the earth. And Daniel's saying, hey, you haven't done that yet. I know we rebelled, but God, if all you do is bring justice upon us, that's not righteous unless you also forgive us. Because I remember Ezekiel said something about you're going to give us a new heart. We don't have that yet. We'd like to have that. And you told Jeremiah that 70 years are going to pass and then you're going to bring us back. And God, that hasn't happened yet. Do you see what he's doing? He's pushing on God's goodness, his right standing, his right relationship. And he's saying, hey, fulfill your promises. And God forgives us out of his good, righteous heart, his mercy. It's a lot like parenting. It's not enough to be a parent that just addresses the son who punches the other kid in the face, right? And say, hey, that's not good. Here's time out. You also have to be righteous in the sense of teach them how to get along, right? If all you do is punish them and bring consequences, but you never sit them eye to eye and say, hey, can we talk about why you punched your brother in the face? I mean, what was going on? And can you forgive? Can you reconcile with each other? Can you talk? Can we talk about this and restore it? That's also being a right parent, and that's what God does. God brings consequences, but those consequences are not to crush us. You know, if you have a vision of God as this vengeful God that hates his creation, that's not the gospel. Do you know that? Because I think that gets captivated in our hearts. I think the enemy puts it there. For God so hated the world that he sent his one and only son. We know it so well, right? Right. God so despised. No, God loved his wicked creation, and God knew it was right for him to bring justice upon his creation, and yet he longed for, like a kid, like for our children, he longed for his kids to be brought back. And so God's righteousness both brings his justice, which Daniel says, I'm guilty. I'm guilty. Now, did you notice that Daniel puts himself in the story of it with everyone else? And does that surprise you? Because, like, the dude is actually a pretty decent guy. And he didn't do the stuff everybody else did. But as he's looking at the mess in the world, and sometimes you're looking at the mess of the world, and you're like, these guys are messing it up, and I'm not a part of it. That's not righteous. Daniel's looking at the mess in the world and our country and all that's going on. He's like, I'm a part of this, God. And you know what that takes him to? Humility. I'm no different than anyone else. Nebuchadnezzar, listen, you're a pretty rotten guy. You've done a lot of horrible things, but my heart's not very different from yours. And so I can show you compassion and care and concern and be a man of character. And God's going to judge you, but listen, I'm not escaping this either. God's going to judge me. That's righteousness. And it takes Daniel to a place of humility. We need that in the church today. Or we're not looking and comparing ourselves to others. We're comparing ourselves to the heart of God. And that should take us, when you see God and you see your sin, it takes you to a place of humility. It should. But on the flip side, there's tremendous courage. That God, you're righteous, and you, it's your righteousness that leads you to forgive us. It's your righteousness that shows up in mercy because you're faithful to your promises. You're faithful to your promises. See, we didn't read the rest of this passage in Daniel. Some of you know Daniel chapter 9 pretty well, and it kind of gets weird, as Daniel does. And it starts talking about weeks and days and all of these things. Do you know that stuff? What's all that about? We didn't get into it real quickly, but here we're going to end on this. What Daniel's seeing and recognizing through this vision is God saying those 70 years in exile, that wasn't enough to purify your heart, guys. Like with our kids, too, sometimes the consequence of sitting in timeout, does it purify their hearts? No. God, that's what God's saying with all the 70 weeks and days. Like, listen, that's not enough. Something more has to happen. And the end of Daniel 9 is just the gospel. It's Jesus. It's saying Jesus has to come. Why? Because on the cross, we see the fullness of God's righteousness. Do you know that? On the cross. On the cross, I see the ugliness of my sin that crucified Jesus. But on the cross, I also see the mercy of God that crucified Jesus, that I didn't get what I deserved. But I see what it cost God to take upon himself my sin so that why? Why? So that I might have redemption and mercy and forgiveness. And when you grasp that, when you take that into your life, and that's what Daniel's doing, and he's in a world that's messy and ugly, he's got this deep humility that takes him to a place where he recognizes I deserve justice, but it also takes him to a place of deep courage and compassion that says, everybody else around me is the same. And that's what the cross does. And I think in this season, that's what we need. We need people who are driven by the gospel, who are captivated by the love of God through Jesus Christ, and recognize we are as much in need of grace. And that allows me, when I know I'm in need of grace, and I approach that little speck, because it's just a speck, I got the log in my eye, and I'm addressing that log, it allows me to come towards you in a way that allows you to receive the truth of God's justice, and also the truth of his grace. And church, that's what we need for each other. I need you in my life like that. And we need each other in each other's lives to point that out. That's what the book of Daniel is teaching us. It's good. Hey, this morning we're going to celebrate communion. If you didn't grab the elements when you came in, it's okay, because most of us kind of forget when we walk in. And so they're available up front, and they're also available in the back, and we want to encourage you just to hold those elements, and the bread represents Jesus' broken body. That through his broken body and his shed blood, he established a new covenant, a new promise with us. That the security of our relationship with the Father, I'm so glad it's not based on how well I'm performing today, or how well my marriage is going, or whether I shoveled my neighbor's driveway. It's based on his goodness and his sacrifice for us. And that's the security of our relationship with God. And so as we hold those elements, we have the chance, like we talked this morning, to repent, to turn, say, God, forgive me. Thank you for your faithfulness in my life. And can I say to some of you, don't avoid the consequence of your own sin. For years, I ran away from the consequences my behaviors were bringing into my marriage. I don't know if I'm speaking to anyone or into my relationships, because I wanted to have my rebellion, but I didn't want to experience the consequence of that rebellion. But you know what confession is? It means to come into the light. And when you do, she's going to get mad. Yeah. But it brings truth, and it brings light, and it brings freedom and restoration. So wherever you are, whether that means a relationship with someone in this room or a relationship with God, would you just bring it into the light? Would you allow him to expose you? And then would you find his good, merciful righteousness covers you, loves you, redeems you, forgives you? That's the goodness of our God. Let's hold those elements, and then after a time of prayer, we're going to celebrate what God's done. Mm-hmm.